You're listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Soul Chronicles. This is our second season. We're very, very excited. The first season was kind of experimental, right, Nikita?
Yeah, I mean, we just put our little pinky toe in the water to see what types of responses we would get to our stories. And it was overwhelmingly positive. So we said, let's keep it going.
Let's keep it going. Funny enough, we have like so many stories that we, like, I thought that we had run out, right? How we were like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do when we run out of stories? And like, when we brainstormed that day, we realized we kind of got a lot of stories.
No, Mohammeda, we ended up in like half an hour mapping out this whole second season with just all the experiences that we've had. And I think that these stories are probably even more compelling than the first season. So I'm excited to dive in.
Yes, yes, great. So I'm Mohammeda El-Muhajir, one of the co-hosts of The Soul Chronicles, along with...
Hi, y'all. I'm Nikita Newell-Hall, and I'm so excited to be embarking on this second season journey with Mohammeda and with all of you.
Yeah, so The Soul Chronicles is a podcast which explores our journey in the sneakers, sports, and entertainment industries and all the many personalities who we interact with along the way. So yeah, so Nikita, just speaking about the brainstorm and just kind of saying, who are we going to talk about? What experiences will we share this season? And how did we come up with this person? Like, you were like, oh, I think I was, how did we come up with this?
No, I can tell you exactly how we came up with this person.
Okay.
That we said we wanted to kick the season off with once we realized we had a really great story to share. So you are always on my case. Like, you have stories and I feel like you knew this person and I feel like you did more with them. And I know for a fact you had a good relationship with these people, right? And you're 99% of the time, you're right. You're just on me like, no, you stop and think about this story because I know you have something.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you were like, well, I mean, I do have this one story with this person. And I'm like, wait a minute, what? And then you told me the story and I fell out of my chair. I'm like, you are harassing me about my experiences and I just need to think harder. And you have a whole freaking amazing, brilliant story with the most popular person on the planet.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to put the dunce's hat on for that one. So people, today's episode is about the queen bee, Beyonce.
Beyonce.
Woo! And okay. So let me just say this. The reason why I didn't initially think about my experience with Beyonce was because almost all of the stories that we were telling were within the sneaker industry, while we worked in sports or in sneaker. And this particular interaction with Beyonce, like, I was out of the sneaker game. Okay. So that's why it didn't like initially come to my mind. And then I realized this is just not about sneakers and sports. It's about our interaction working with some pretty amazing people, entertainers, and personalities. So that's why she didn't come to my mind at first. I know, like, how? I don't know. But anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So let's.
You still getting the side eye.
I know. Okay. I mean, I deserve it, right? So as I said, I worked with Beyonce through an organization called GEMS, which is in Harlem, New York. It's Girls Educational Mentoring Services, and it's an organization that supports young women who have been involved in human trafficking in New York City. And I volunteered with this organization. It was just a cause that was really, really dear to me. And I just like love the work that they do. It's so hands-on. I mean, they have housing and training just for like girls as young as like 10 and 11 years old who have been trafficked, sex trafficked right under our nose, right in New York City. So that is GEMS. I had like volunteered with them for a few years, just helped them, maybe PR or hook them up with any celebrities that I knew, just different things like that. right, over the years. And then I stopped working. I had a child. I was out of the game. I was no longer working in sneakers, sports, entertainment. I was doing an entrepreneur thing. I actually owned a cafe before I had my daughter, but I closed it. And so when she was 6, 7, 8 months or something, I was like, oh, I think I want to work part-time. So I actually saw a role at Gyms, and I called Rachel, the executive director, and was like, hey, Rachel, I saw this job. I'm looking to do something kind of part-time a few days a week. And she was like, you know what? It's so crazy that you called me, because forget about that. I have something else that I need your help with. She was like, they had done this documentary, and the documentary showed on Showtime. And it was a documentary about the work that they do at Gyms. And I think Rachel probably had written a book. Maybe it was based on that. I'm not sure, but it was this documentary. And it was getting a lot of attention, right? And then one day Rachel said, a woman called. The woman turned out to be Tina Knowles. And she said, listen, my daughter, Beyonce, right? And I think they talk about Beyonce in the third person, just crazy, even in her presence, right? Mm-hmm. Saw this documentary and said, I want to help. How can I help? How can we be a part of what they're doing? And so, So I guess on one of her trips to New York, she came to meet Rachel, and Rachel was trying to figure out, what do we do? How do we get Beyonce in our mix and capitalize off of it, you know, in a positive way? And she was like, so when you called me, because she knew my background in entertainment and partnerships and that kind of thing. And she was like, and I mean, aside from that, they were doing stuff with like Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher. So it was like all this celebrity stuff. And she was like, I don't know that world. And I would prefer to have someone who really understands that world to be a part to help us facilitate this. So that's how it started. So I was there just kind of like helping them to kind of like navigate some of these relationships. And I'll just say this, and we're going to talk a little bit. We haven't worked with Beyonce all that much, but I would just say this. You see this woman touring the world, fans blowing the hair, just like this amazing, like almost larger than life personality. And let me just say this, Jim's office was in this little 2-bedroom hot ass apartment in Harlem, like 135th Street, I don't know, something. And like a walk up, no elevator, like 3rd or 4th floor, nothing like that. Just like real, the real deal. And Beyonce would come. I felt like I was there like 2 times that she came to Gyms to meet the girls. I mean, walk up the stairs. I don't even think that he had any security with her. I mean, he probably was there. I mean, because I would have seen that big guy in the room, but it was like her and her mom in a packed room with like 20 girls. Like, can you imagine? Like, I just can't even imagine how those girls must have felt to be in the room with her. And she, my God, like, just like, I don't even know, she's like a very humble spirit anyway. You kind of see it and you don't know if it's an act or something, but just like she would sit there. And like they would go around the room and like every girl would just say what they had to say. She would let them sing. She would let them read a poem. She would let them tell a story about their life. I mean, she wouldn't, like nobody would stop them. They would just go on and we would be crying. Like we would be laughing. She would kiss babies. Like, and she would just sit in there for like 2 hours. I don't know. And just vibe and connect. And it was like a spiritual thing. That's what I would say, because it wasn't like she was like talking to them all that much. She was mostly engaging and listening and letting them know that somebody as important as me loves you and believes in you. And I'm here to hear you. Right. So that kind of interaction happened, I would say, I want to say about 2 times. Right. And then one time she was like, y'all all be singing. Okay. That's, you know, not Beyonce's voice, but anyway.
Well, she is from the South, so I can imagine she probably said the y'all part. That part probably is right.
So she was saying something like, you know, because they like, oh my God, because imagine they all wanted to like sing for her, right? And she was like, oh, you girls are, she probably said something more like, you girls are all so talented. we need to have a talent show, right? So the next thing I knew, my job was to coordinate this Beyonce-funded talent show for the gym's girls, right?
How fun.
Yes. And this is going to just be a private thing just for gym. So like no audience. I don't think their family members or anybody really could come. I'm not sure yet because it was very small. Right. So my task was to kind of like put this talent show together, put the budget together and like make it happen. Right. So since we were in Harlem, I thought it would be good just to kind of stay in Harlem and do something like more community oriented. And so I kind of like looked at a few places and I ended up selecting the Schomburg. Which is part of the New York Public Library, but it's like probably one of the houses, one of the biggest collections of like Black literature, history, archives. So I just thought that was like very Harlem and it just kind of like felt right. They had a little theater downstairs. And funny enough, you know how it is, Nikita, when you're like working with like artists, you don't want to like tell people who it is that's coming.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Because you want to minimize any drama that could possibly happen. You could come and it'd be like TMZ and
droves of people.
Yes. And that was just like, I was like, Lord, please. So I like, even when I like booked the space and everything, I just didn't tell them who it was for, what it was about. Yeah. So we like booked the space. And we had this talent show. I booked the caterer. Shout out to my friend, Nadie Howard Grad. She has a catering company. I didn't tell her who it was for either. But she catered this event. And basically, it was like what was happening in the apartment, but it was just on stage. So like the girls, they took turns. They had their act, like just like a regular talent show. Some did poems, some did songs, some did dance. And she was the audience. There were some other staff and stuff like that from gyms, but mainly it was just like her and like her crew and her people. And I feel like she gave them all like a gift at the end. And it was just such a special experience. I mean, even just to witness it. I mean, I wasn't singing or dancing or anything like that, but just to witness it and just the joy that the girls had. And then afterwards, they were able to go to one of her concerts backstage. So it was like a real, genuine relationship. And it wasn't the kind of thing where she just like wrote a check, which she could have easily done, but she really wanted to like give of herself. And that was just like, I feel like I really got to see her as the woman that she is, as the spiritual being that she is. It was just a beautiful thing to witness. So, yeah. Wow.
I love that story because, I mean, you know, philanthropy is a big part of my life and yours too. I mean, whenever there's an opportunity to deposit something into someone's life and that you think is really going to make a difference, we want to be at the front and center of that. So it's just so refreshing to know that the person we think she is, that she really is that person, right?
We just totally forgot this at the end of the day is the Soul Chronicles. Hello, her whole Ivy Park Adidas
deal. Yes.
Huge. And did you see the way that they sent out we invented this.
No, and they sent out whole rolling racks though.
But you know we did that. Like the way would send that stuff to influencers, artists, they would just open up boxes on any given day with like our stuff. When I saw that, I was like, I know.
Yeah, no, me too. That's the other thing too, to think about. Oh my gosh, how do we not mention this part? Did you read that, remember in the beginning when she first signed her deal, that she asked them to pause because she wasn't happy with the way the team looked and wanted to be sure that she had a good representation of people of color in order to bring her vision to life? Like that struck me when I read that. I was like, see, this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about. So yeah, we cannot talk about the Soul Chronicles without talking about the Adidas Ivy Park collaboration.
Yeah, that was huge.
And just how that has helped to stabilize that Adidas stock and how just winning all the way around.
let me just bring this. So with Ivy Park, initially it was just her own independent company, right? Just her own independent like merch.
Yeah, I think so. But what I don't know, and I can look this up, is if it was independently owned or she had a licensing deal through another company.
Okay.
So yeah, so Ivy Park did exist. Yeah, so it existed on its own. And then, you know what I'm wondering? I wonder if it was hers because she kept the name when she brought it over to Adidas.
Yeah, I figure it was. And this is an interesting topic concept that we're going to bring up throughout this particular season of just like artists and ownership and the impact that artists have on brands. And I know it's big, but I don't think they truly understand from a corporate level how they impact the business. They think it's almost like clout, like, yeah, I got a deal. But like, no, you are like affecting global business, global sales. And I'm just like, if they kind of really understood that, I think sometimes they might like focus on their own brands a little bit more. But yeah, like I said, we're going to talk about that in a few more episodes. But yeah, I would have been curious to see like how far Ivy Park went, if she like really kind of put energy behind it before the Adidas kind of partnership.
Yeah. So this is really interesting. What I'm reading is that they started Ivy Park in October 2014 as a joint venture with Topshop, right? And then in 2016, they came out with the launch of their first product line. In 2018, Parkwood Entertainment acquired total ownership of the Ivy Park brand. So co-founder, this guy, they're calling him Philip Green, Sir Philip Green, and he had some kind of scandal, it looks like. And so they ended up buying Ivy Park from him. And so now it looks like she fully owns it. And so that makes sense to me how now the Adidas collaboration could still be with Ivy Park. Because remember, initially I was like, licensing joint venture type thing. So
right.
So yeah.
I guess a lot of the artists over at Adidas are doing some pretty big things.
Yeah, I think they've learned from some of the missteps of some of the other sneaker brands that did celebrity collaborations that ended up falling by the wayside for one reason or another. It seemed like they sort of figured out how to make it work for both the artist and for the brand. And I think your comment is well taken, that I think we're going to see more celebrities taking their own brands and taking them to the next level instead of just doing it for these other companies as either a collaboration or a joint venture. They're going to figure out why 100% ownership makes sense. So yeah.
I would say, just speaking about her and who she is, I like have this kind of like sixth sense. I feel like all I have to do is get like a 3-second glimpse of a person and I can like do a read on them, right? So before this situation, back when I was at Nike, there was this time that I went to a hotel. I was like dropping off some product for somebody. I don't even know who. But when I entered the hotel, this was like, I feel like original 4 Destiny's Child. It could have been 3, but no, back then at Nike time, it was still Destiny's 4, original 4. So when I was entering the hotel, the girls were coming out of the hotel at the exact same time. So like I had to maybe step away or they had to step away, something like that, right? So it was 4. Now I'm just like a girl just coming in with some bags, and the girls, they didn't really pay me any mind except for Beyonce. She said, "Ooh, I like your boots." Right?
Now, she probably did say it like that. That does sound like that.
Right. But, you know, this is a small thing, but in that moment, I knew she was a different kind of person. Why do I say that? I say she was a different kind of person because, first of all, for a Black girl to give another Black girl a compliment, you already know you got to be like, yes, got to be a super kind of confident woman. I mean, being Beyonce. When you see what someone else can offer or has, you have to be like a confident kind of person. Not everybody gives compliments. I know it seems like a small thing. And when like they're kind of like in their like Miss Little Diva, we're emerging artists, none of the other girls probably even like phased like who this chick was. I'm just like some random person. But for her, like nothing, she doesn't miss anything. right? She saw my boots, my shoes, like in like seconds, like in those few seconds. So from that moment, I knew that she was like different. Like, and sometimes people can act like someone is beneath them. So why would they, I'm just like, they're stars and I'm just normal. Like, why would they even say anything to me? But yeah, no. So I was just like, oh, I knew from that moment, this girl is a little something different about her. And then years later, I actually got to see it. It was true.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I remember back in the day, like Columbia Records, they were so on point. I mean, they had any and everybody in pop music, really, but definitely the hotter sort of R&B, sort of Black music stars, they were reigning. And my friend James Andrews was over there and he called me up one day. And from time to time, he'd be like, oh, you know, I'm going to bring this person in. I want to bring that person in. We had a really good rapport that way. In fact, he was the reason I ended up working at Nike. That's the story I think we told already. But but James was like, okay, I got somebody for you. And I was like, okay. He was like, now you probably don't really know of them yet, but I promise you they're going to be big. I said, okay, well, I'll just see them based on your strength, right? Based on the strength of your word. He was like, okay, cool. So we worked on a couple weeks on just getting our schedules together or whatever. And then one day he called me. He was like, this group, Destiny's Child. And I think at that point they had, what was the song they did and Jermaine Dupri did the remix? Was it Say My Name?
Okay, maybe so.
No, the same song.
Wyclef, I think, is the one who did No 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 remix. And that's when it was the change in their whole careers from that point. So could.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe. Because we were also working a lot with the Fugees, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, he brought them in. And it was the original four girls. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, Beyonce was the sweetest. They all were, though. Yeah. Kelly was wonderful. Yeah. I mean, all of the girls were so sweet. And I really remember our interaction because when people would come in the showroom, celebrities, they would just lose their mind. I mean, they'd be like kid in the candy store. I want this. I want that. I want this. I want that. But these girls, I would have to be like, here, do you like this? They'd be like, yeah, that's nice. I'm like, do you want it? Okay. You know, so I would have to like push stuff off on them. And they were so excited and so thrilled to come in. And when they walked away, I just remember thinking, wow, what beautiful spirits. And not just Beyonce, though, all of the girls. And then shortly thereafter, I sort of took on another role within the company. So I no longer dealt with music day to day. And then they just took off from there. So I didn't really work with her anymore after that. But I do remember just having that wonderful interaction with them and just watching her career over the years and her being such a role model for women, right? At first, used to be young girls, right? But as she's matured, she's really become that example for women. And I know my heart and my chest just stuck all the way out when I experienced homecoming. Mm-hmm. I mean, that piece, and just watching the behind the scenes of how that all came together and just how she bridged the gap between the world and HBCUs. HBCUs used to just be our own little thing within the Black community, right?
Right. And if the listeners who don't know, Nikita and I both are alums of HBCUs. I'm Howard Bison. Nikita?
Grambling Tiger.
So yes. Yeah. So it was like even that much more special to see that, but continue.
Yeah, because, you know, it was just watching her pay homage, right, to these beautiful institutions that oftentimes are on the brink of extinction simply because of a lack of funding and a lack of investment to be sure that these schools can continue for all kinds of reasons, which we won't even get into to all the reasons why that is the case. And so the fact that she took the time, I mean, the time, if you saw that document, I mean, it took time to put this together and shine a light on these schools. And then to have Grambling be in the documentary, in the video for homecoming, oh, you couldn't tell me nothing. Like, there's actually nothing you could tell me at that point, just to see my school shine on such a stage like that. And then I think she also went on to provide financial support for students in the form of scholarships at quite a few HBCUs. And she also chose some Grambling students to be beneficiaries of that. So, I mean, just the philanthropist Beyonce. Mm-hmm. And let me just say, right, having worked in this business and having worked with a lot of famous people, mm-hmm. they are always doing stuff behind the scenes that you would know of or hear about, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is by no means her only philanthropic pursuit, but, and she bridges the gap in all kinds of ways, but homecoming is one that I definitely wanted to point out. Do you have any other projects of hers that you particularly like?
Well, I mean, just speaking about the impact of homecoming, I feel like it's just a part of American society that, like you said, just like is just known to like us. Like people don't know what our experience is like. They don't know what actually happens on the inside, right? And that was a display of Blackness that I just felt like we had like never seen before in pop culture. Like it was so Black. It was unapologetically, I was just like, this is like something you would think like somebody like some super pro Black kind of like artist would do, but this is like queen of pop, queen of the world. And she is like, yo, I am Blackity, Blackity, Black, Black, Black. This is all the way Black.
And at Coachella, no less.
I know. I mean, just to have that kind of vision, she's one of those artists that you seem like at times that it's her people. You know what I mean? Like, is she really coming up with these ideas? But when it keeps happening over and over and over, you're like, nah, she gotta be having a say in some of this stuff. Yeah. And it was just so authentic. You know, God, it was so authentic. Just having gone to an HBCU, somebody could kind of like fake it and you'd be like, it is not like that. Now, I felt like I was at homecoming for real.
For real, for real. Right. And the fact that she didn't even attend an HBCU.
Right, right.
But it was able to capture the spirit of tells you that she immersed herself.
Yeah. And, you know, she grew up in the South where they would go to those Black college games. Football games mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Like, I mean, I grew up in the Northeast, so it wasn't like that was something that was just like kind of like a part of my upbringing or whatever until I actually attended it. But certain places in the South where the schools are, like people just grow up just knowing that whole culture.
Yeah, no, same for me. I grew up on the West Coast, so my first experience at an HBCU was me stepping on the campus of Grambling mm-hmm. as a freshman mm-hmm. and looking around going, but where are the sidewalks though?
Right.
so yeah.
But yeah, and then just speaking about bridging the gap, I mean, you know that I'm here in Ghana and same way, like just like how she did with the HBCUs, like it was our own private thing. Like I feel like even though Africa is this like huge major continent of the world that like a large percent of the world's population live, a large percent of the world's land, all that resources. It's still like this hidden place that like nobody knows about even in this like modern time. So I felt like what she did with Homecoming, she did the same thing with Black is King.
The
King soundtrack that like just featured all the hottest like African artists. She features so many like African designers. Again, it was just like Blackity, Blackity, Black, 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 all the way Black. You know. And you're like, just when you thought Beyonce couldn't get no Blacker, she went to the mother load. She came to Africa. And that project was, I just thought it was really amazing. You know, the visuals of the film were amazing. But just to really tap in, I mean, I guess she just really has that ability to tap in into really what's next, what's hot, what's like just on the undercurrent. And I felt like Mangana, and so just this last, I guess, came out last year, or when I don't can't I, after COVID hit, I can't even think about how what year.
Right, it's either pre-COVID or post-COVID, right? So it came out pre-COVID.
Yes, right. But you know how like one part came out, and then like the Lion King movie came out, and then some of the songs came out. But then she did a Black is King film, and then released some of the songs. Like so, I think it was like
exactly.
that. So on mm-hmm. that Black is King release, the first single was Already, which is by Chata Wale, who is like the biggest artist in Ghana. He's like Afro dancehall. And that song, like I could never figure out, like that song always was my favorite. And I was like, is that because I'm in Ghana and I know Chata Wale? or is it because like that's the hottest song? But anyway, I felt like it was, and it was just so huge for Ghana, for Africa. So many people saw the beauty of the continent, of the music, of the culture, the style. So she just be making some moves, like cultural moves, like forget about her business. That's on another level. But the way she's impacting culture, man,
And just putting respect on the culture too, right? Yeah. Because that to me is the other piece that's oftentimes missing, even from Black artists who do put the culture on display, is not always done in a respectful way or in a way that helps to preserve the posterity of the culture for future generations, right? That's really important. And so she definitely does that. So I could not think of a better person to kick off this new season with than for us to sort of give a nod to and acknowledge.
Oh, yeah. So stay tuned to the Soul Chronicles because, we're delving into some other issues and opportunities and just exploring just the whole different sides of the sneaker industry, from insiders that you don't hear a lot about, from designers to, we were on the marketing side, but people who work in product and production. So I think it's going to be an exciting season. And it was just like, I feel like Beyonce was just like the perfect person to launch this new season. And yeah, I know it's crazy that I forgot that I had a whole Beyonce story that I was sitting on, but you know.
I mean, and a phenomenal story to boot, like not just any story, but just a beautiful story of sharing and sisterhood. And I'm so glad that you were a part of that, but that our audience gets to hear about it.
And this is what I really love about the Soul Chronicles and doing this podcast. I mean, like, I probably would have never told anyone that story. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, yeah, I met Beyonce. Like, come on, you know, we are not like that. Like, I would have just...
No, ma'am.
Like, I just wouldn't have really told anybody, maybe my daughter, because she's like, do you know Beyonce? But, you know, other than that, we just like sitting on these like amazing stories that I'm just so excited that we have a platform to share it with our listeners and our audience. So, yeah, so that's the end of today's episode. Stay tuned to this season and please comment. Let us know your feedback on this episode or any of our past episodes. And make sure you're following us on social media at The Soul Chronicles on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Thanks for listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America. Be sure to join us for another exciting episode.